Oh, goody.
Yes. So now you have to watch what you say, Sarah Jo.
Oh, darn it.
Do we have anyone else on?
Sarah's here.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hello, this is Helen.
Hi, Helen.
Hello.
This is Jennifer. It's going to be a small group today, so.
Is it?
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. Kathy Mitchell's on the call.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Jennifer.
Scott is here as well.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, it's Joanne.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi, Jen.
Hi, it's Elizabeth.
Hey.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello.
Hi, Dan.
Is this Jen?
Yeah.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good.
And you? Yeah.
Are you on, Jill?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was wondering if you needed anything else from me.
No, I just need to send that back to you. Sorry about that.
No problem. I was just making sure I hadn't done something.
Nope, you're good. I'll whip that up for you today. Sorry.
Not a problem. Not a problem. Thanks.
This is Bill Barnett.
Hi, Bill.
Tatiana's on.
Oh, hi, Tatiana.
Hello.
So, Bill, I thought you were at a conference.
I am. I bailed out.
Get away, huh? We'll just give another minute or two, but it's going to be a small group. I think Jill was just about to say that. A lot of people are at the COFAS meeting, including NIAAA, so. So just to go down the roster, I have Bill. Is Ken Jones on? He was not going to be right, Jill. I have Scott, Elizabeth, Sarah, Tatiana, Joanne, Kathy Mitchell, Sarah Jo, and Dan, and Helen. Did I miss anyone?
Peter, I'm here.
Hi.
Oh,
hi,
sorry.
Tom.
Hi, Tom. Got Tom and Peter?
Yep.
Okay. Well, Ed and the number, and NIAAA and a number of people are at the COFAS meeting, so whether it's an official call without NIAAA or not, I'm not sure, but we'll go ahead anyway. And the first thing we were going to do today is I think Scott has the WebEx, so are you ready to go, Scott? Do you want to start us off?
Yeah. My slides?
Yes,
I can. Yep.
Is it? Do you see the full slide or the? No, you do.
We see the notes page.
Okay, let me switch then. There we go. Okay, so I've talked a lot about the ethanol cannabinoids, the synergistic action, and I've presented some of that already, and we're just finishing up this study, and we have a little bit of mechanistic data along with all of our fetal data, and we're trying to decide where to submit this. I'm not sure I want to submit it to an alcohol journal, but I'll present this what I have, and you guys can make suggestions. Okay, so can you see my mouse?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, so this data here, most of this data, the CP55940, the synthetic cannabinoid, we've already published. And then we've gone on and shown that HU210, which is another synthetic cannabinoid, even more potent than this one, is also teratogenic. And if you start to get much above 0.1 milligrams per kilogram, you start to kill everybody. We also have some data that THC, the active ingredient marijuana, is also teratogenic. And again, you start to get up to 17 milligrams per kilogram and above, and again, you start to kill everybody. So we actually wanted to see what we can do with alcohol. So we took a moderate dose of the CP, since that's our favorite cannabinoid, and a fairly low dose of alcohol. So this is about half of the alcohol that is in the classic Kathy Suvick model. And we can give them, and the alcohol alone, which is this bar right here, is barely enough to induce any eye defects above and beyond the controls. And when we mix that with a moderate dose of the cannabinoids, we get this synergistic effect. And we see that across the other synthetic cannabinoid, HU210, and THC. So we can give a fairly low dose of THC, and it causes some defects with this low dose of alcohol, and we get this huge effect with the two drugs combined together. And, of course, we get our holoprosencephalase. This is all from a day 8 exposure, so just a single day exposure. And from either of these, or this alcohol dose never causes this, and even this cannabinoid dose, we really don't get these severe defects. So they're clearly working together. And just for the sake of completeness, if we go back and give our usual high dose of alcohol, which induces 40% defects, and we get 40% defects with this cannabinoid dose, we get defects. When we combine them, we get defects in almost everybody. It's pretty striking. So we teamed up with our collaborator at NC Central, Kevin Williams, because he's a sonic hedgehog expert, and all of these phenotypes we know result from perturbations of the sonic hedgehog pathway, just, the typical holoprosencephaly that you see in classic FAS. And what he did is he has a cell line that has a marker that when you treat with sonic hedgehog, or you put sonic hedgehog into the assay, you get this response, a positive response, showing that you're activating the hedgehog pathway. Well, when we give any of these cannabinoids, this is another CB1 antagonist, this is a CB1 and CB2 antagonist, this is cannabidiol, it's not a CB1 or CB2 agonist, but it has been shown previously to maybe inhibit in a cell line again, to inhibit hedgehog activity. This is a molecule that blocks the enzymes that break down the endocannabinoids, so it increases endocannabinoid tone. Anyway, with all four of these compounds, and we have some data from other compounds too, that they all inhibit the hedgehog pathway in this cell assay, and pretty strikingly inhibit it. So we looked at sonic hedgehog expression in our embryos, and this is about 24 hours after exposure to the cannabinoid alone, and we've shown that we can pretty strikingly inhibit hedgehog pathway, not in every embryo, but in a significant number of embryos, which, again, we don't always affect every embryo, so you wouldn't expect to reduce hedgehog in every embryo, I would expect. And we can show that we can give the same dose of CP, the 0.25 milligrams per kilogram. And in the wild-type hedgehog, this is our typical knockout model, we can cause defects in, 12 to 13% of the wild types, and it's much, much higher in the Sonic Hedgehog heterozygotes. So we again teamed up with another collaborator at NC Central, who's a Greg Cole, who some of you know, who's a zebrafish expert, and he looks at eye defects and midbrain, hindbrain boundary things. And he looked at alcohol, as he usually does, and he does a fairly high dose of alcohol, and you can see a lot of small eye defects. And then he sort of gets this dose response effect with the cannabinoid alone, and it plateaus off to 100% pretty quickly. And then, of course, he tried it with a low dose of the cannabinoids, like the ones that just produce 25 to 30%, and a much, much lower dose of alcohol. And he doesn't get any effects with just this 0.5% dose of alcohol. And again, he can see synergistic actions in the zebrafish, which is kind of cool. So we're showing in mice and zebrafish that we're getting these effects of both CP and alcohol together. And very cool, he can, again, give these moderate doses of CP, the 2.5, that, if you remember, that doesn't do much on its own, but and with alcohol, you get this 50% defects here. And he can inject Sonic Hedgehog RNA into the embryos, which is another cool feature of the zebrafish, and he can almost completely block that effect. So we can almost completely rescue by injecting Sonic Hedgehog RNA. So very clearly we're affecting the Sonic Hedgehog pathway, which, like I said, has only been shown in one paper and only in an in vitro cell assay. Now, to complicate things, we ask the question of, these agonists are CB1 and CB2 receptor agonist. What happens if we give the antagonist? So here's the antagonist. It doesn't do much on its own. We have this dose of CP, so we see defects in almost 50% of embryos, and we chose this dose just because it induces about a 50% defect level. We give a low dose or moderate dose of the antagonist, and this is the SR compound, is the CB1 selective antagonist. We can bring down the percent of defects. We give a slightly higher dose of the antagonist. We can almost completely block the effects of CP. So that raises the question of, we can block by giving mRNA to Sonic Hedgehog mRNA, or we can block by giving the receptor antagonist. How are we doing it? So this is where we're at now. We've been combing through the literature, and we've come up with this model. And let me walk you through this. So first, absolutely nobody has shown any interaction between CB1 antagonist, which is CB1 receptor activity, which is the main receptor expressed in the embryo in the brain, with the Sonic Hedgehog pathway. The way that the Sonic Hedgehog pathways is normally you have patched, inhibit, smoothened. And then when Sonic Hedgehog binds, patch releases its inhibition of smoothened, and smoothened cleaves the GLE repressor forms, so repressor, R stands for repressor, and cleaves them into the activator forms, which then go on to modify transcription and normal cell proliferation, etc. And it's recently been shown that smoothened does this most likely through blocking G proteins, suggesting that smoothened is a G protein coupled receptor. And when it blocks these G proteins, which under normal circumstances are activating PKA, and PKA is blocking this normal progression of the repressor form of GLE to the activator form. Well, it's been known for a long time that CB1 receptors are G protein coupled receptors. And when you activate CB1 receptors through cannabinoids, then you can possibly activate G proteins, which activate pKa, or phosphorylate pKa, and then block this activation of the hedgehog pathway. So, and there is a small amount of evidence, not very much, but a small amount, that ethanol on its own can block FA, which is the enzyme that breaks down the endocannabinoids into their constituent components. So we have this model here where there's a little bit of data previously published and now with our in vitro model, our cell assay, that the cannabinoids can directly block smoothened, which then blocks hedgehog activity. There's a possibility that ethanol could increase endocannabinoid tone, which also can block smoothened. At the same time, we're also activating CB1, which activates G proteins, which then cause pKa to activate and block transcription. And there is good evidence in embryos that ethanol can block, can also activate pKa on its own. So we have this model where we have multiple convergence of ethanol, cannabinoid, and activation of receptors all converging on pKa, which is blocking the activation of gliese and thus the hedgehog pathway. So that's our story. Anybody have any questions or suggestions?
Scott, this is Dan. A couple questions. Yeah. One, is it known what subtype of G proteins that smoothen regulates? Because cannabinoid 1 receptors, to activate pKa, you have to activate the G alpha S subtype of G protein. And what's actually better known about what cannabinoid receptors couple to are the GIGOs, which inhibit adenylate cyclase and would actually reduce cyclic AMP accumulations and should, in effect, reduce pKa activity. So it seems like there needs to be a little more information about that part of the scheme there between the CB1 receptor and smoothen and the G proteins that they couple to or regulate.
So, okay. That's
really one
question. Good question. Okay. All right, let me take that one first. It is not very clear which G proteins that are in the hedgehog pathway. The CB1 pathway is a little better, or the cannabinoid pathway is a little better defined. But it is not. I need to look into this a little more. But it is, as far as I know, it is not completely known. Partly because it is largely, it is also tissue dependent.
Okay.
So, which means that we can't translate, you know, which G proteins it is into the embryo. We do have a little bit of evidence that that CB1 is coupling to GAI, one of them, two of them, and I totally forget which one. It's very preliminary data, and we were saving it for a later publication because it's not complete yet. But to answer your question, I don't know. I don't know what how smoothen is working, and I don't think anyone does.
Okay, well, and you say it may be tissue-specific, and that could be part of it. Mm-hmm. The other question is, are the concentrations of ethanol that inhibit FA, the enzyme that breaks down AEA, are those concentrations similar to the concentrations that you're getting in your model system as part of the potential mechanism?
No, so the one paper, and I almost hesitate to even put this in here, partly because it's one paper and it's in a postnatal model, and a postnatal mouse model. But their concentrations were much lower. Their tissue levels, or their sorry, their BACs were much lower than what we typically do. You know, like in the 200 mm-hmm. ranges, I think.
So clearly, in your model, you've probably inhibited the enzyme maximally.
We probably are.
Okay.
Now, it may not be enough to do it on its own, or it might, I don't know. And one of the reasons that I like this model, in case a lot of people may not realize this, but all of these phenotypes that we see in this model, in the alcohol cannabinoid model, all of these phenotypes that we're seeing are from a day 8 exposure, so an early nurulation exposure. Mm-hmm. If you remember from all of Kathy's work, all of the holoprotencephaly phenotype is from a day 7 exposure, so it's a day earlier. When we expose to alcohol on day 8, just alcohol, in a high, whether it's high or low dose, we can do both, we actually don't get a holoprosencephaly spectrum. That's when we get the ciliopathy spectrum, which is the exact opposite. Kathy and has hypothesized over the years that a gastrulation stage exposure, day 7, inhibits this pathway, the sonic hedgehog pathway, and that's why you get holoprosencephaly. And that's been shown, you know, for decades that you can knock out sonic hedgehog and get holoprosencephaly. You can block the sonic hedgehog pathway with various chemicals and get holoprosencephaly. Okay. But the ethanol exposure to get holoprosencephaly is at day 7. When we expose on just ethanol on day 8, we actually get a widening of the brain, and Peter's, with Peter's hypertillerism study, that we get something along the ciliopathy spectrum. Now, and the reason that we've been investigating this a lot is that it has puzzled us as to why on day 8 we exposed to just alcohol, we get a widening of the brain, an expansion of ventral midline tissue, which is what you see in ciliopathies. But then when we expose to ethanol and cannabinoids, you get the opposite on the same day. And I think we have hypothesized that ethanol by itself is disrupting cilia, primary cilia. You guys have heard that story before, I think. That's why we're getting something on the ciliopathy spectrum. But we think that when ethanol and cannabinoids are combined, when we give ethanol by itself, we could be activating PKA and blocking this pathway, but we're disrupting cilia so much that none of this effect does much with ethanol by itself, because we're disrupting cilia, and you need cilia for this whole thing to work right. And when you give alcohol, because you're disrupting cilia by themselves, you're actually overactivating the sonic hedgehog pathway. That's our ciliopathy model. With alcohol and cannabinoids together, we're having effects that are independent of the cilia, because we're hitting things before the signal ever gets to the cilia, if that makes sense. And so we're blocking the hedgehog, we'll say upstream of the cilia necessary cilia activation. Anyway, that was a long rant to say that we're trying to justify how we get holoprosencephaly on a day with alcohol and cannabinoids on a period of exposure when alcohol alone can't cause holoprosencephaly.
Okay, thank you.
Does that make sense?
Yes, I mean, I'm just trying to wrap my head around all the various things that, or the different sites where ethanol could be interacting with this pathway. So,
yeah,
I agree with you. It's complex.
Yeah, I suppose it is possible that ethanol is inhibiting FOD, and that's how we're getting a lot of alcohol effects. You know, we don't know how ethanol, like during a gas relation stage exposure, we know that sonic hedgehog is being decreased somehow. But we don't know if it's just apoptosis. You know, we're just killing the cells that are producing hedgehog or the cells that are receiving hedgehog, or if it's this effect on FA. You know, we have not studied it. We, I have an R1 that we submitted to look at that, but resubmitted. That got scored, but not well, quite well enough.
Okay.
Scott, this is Jennifer. So you haven't looked at endocannabinoid levels or metabolites yet?
No, we have proposed to do that, but it's it's not cheap, so we have not yet done it. But I would, we have proposed to do that in our R1 to look at endocannabinoids.
And then I was also curious about the, some of the data you were showing earlier about the cannabidiol. It seemed like you were seeing some effects of cannabidiol as well, and have you looked at the combination of the cannabidiol with the alcohol?
Have we done? We did not look at the combination yet, partly because the cannabidiol was really weak. We had to give quite a lot of the cannabidiol to get an effect. And when, if we get much higher than this, we're actually killing the embryos. And I think we're running into heart defects. I think that's the same thing for THC and HU210, that we get much higher than this. We know that the cannabinoid receptors are expressed in the heart. We've shown that. But I think that at these higher doses, we're getting heart defects. We have not looked at cannabidiol and alcohol together, partly because we have to give so much cannabidiol to even have an effect.
Or one would really expect that maybe the lower doses are actually protective, potentially.
Ooh. Maybe. That's a thought.
Thank you. Does anyone else have questions? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
No. Go ahead. I was
just going to see if anyone else had questions for you.
No.
I had one more. Can you go back to the dose response question or the slide, Scott?
This one?
No, the one that had the antagonist and the ASA. You just passed it.
This is the...
It's the
dose response curve that had the four different drugs on there. Cell... There you go. So the JZL is a cannabinoid 1 antagonist?
No, the JZL is a FA inhibitor.
Oh, a FA inhibitor. Okay. All right.
This...
I misunderstood you before.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we just wanted to see if we could give the FA inhibitors and basically to see if the endocannabinoids would mm-hmm. We just wanted to replicate the previous study. Because there was one study done about 2 years ago which showed, in a cell culture model, that THC and cannabidiol can inhibit hedgehog activity. So we included mm-hmm. cannabidiol and this as a sort of a replication of those previous data.
Okay. And the specificity of ASA and CP for CB1 versus CB2 receptors?
So CP55940 is it's about 50 times more potent for than THC, but it binds to both CB1 and CB2. ACEA is pretty selective for CB1.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have evidence both immunohistochemically and with RNA that there's quite a bit of CB1 in the embryos, but we can't find any CB2. It doesn't seem to be expressed, or if it is expressed, it's at very low levels.
Yeah. Are these whole embryos that you're doing the analysis from? Or are they brains?
So the immunohisto is whole embryos. It's, you know, sliced embryos.
Okay.
The RNA, that's just brain.
Okay.
I have a suspicion that CB2 is expressed in the heart.
Yeah, I mean, it's more peripherally distributed, although I'm not sure of the ontology relative to, before birth. But, I mean, most of the CB1 is likely to be in the brain. So, okay.
Yeah, no one does. No one has, sorry, I didn't mean to do that. No one has looked at what CB1 is doing at this time point in development. So there's no one has ever looked at it. So we have no idea what CB1 is doing. And in fact, we were one of the first to show that it's even expressed at these periods of development. And of course, this will be the first to show that there's a big interaction between the cannabinoids and the sonic hedgehog pathway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess my question is, now we have this data, I want to get it published fairly soon, hopefully without doing too many more experiments, at least until NIDAR funds us. Where should I publish this? Anybody have any good suggestions? One of the reasons we are excited about this is because I think that what this will help us do is that the cannabinoid system and all of the synthetic cannabinoids and the antagonist and agonist, there's a lot of tools to manipulate the cannabinoid receptor system. And if it's playing a role in ethanol teratogenesis, this holds a lot of promise, I think, for us to be able to start looking at ethanol's mechanisms, which is what I'm really interested in, is how ethanol is teratogenic. And we feel that if there is this significant interaction between cannabinoids and ethanol, or this synergistic action, that we can start to use all of the tools, the pharmacological tools, to manipulate the cannabinoid system to start to parse out some of ethanol's actions. And there's, and it seems that there's data that ethanol and cannabinoids seem to interact in other systems too. There's unpublished data from here at UNC in NC Central. That should be published soon, but in adults, or adolescents at least, that ethanol and cannabinoids are having interacting functions. And then there's a paper or two by Balipal, who also showed that ethanol may be acting in postnatal mice, maybe through the endocannabinoid system. So, anyway.
Scott, a couple of ideas, although I'm not sure it would hit the translational options that you want, but American Journal of Physiology is a possibility, or one of the open access, like Frontiers Journals, Frontiers in Neuroscience, or Frontiers in Endocrinology. I'm not sure. I mean, things reach an audience because people now scan by keywords, and so it's not quite the same as you need the exact journal, but you want a journal that's a high level. And
we were thinking about just, one person suggested just sending it to development, which is a good journal.
Yep, that's a good idea.
And it would... It would reach a wide audience, and it's a good journal itself, so that would be a positive. But, well, if anyone thinks of anything, you can just email me or something, or if you have any other things. But I will give it up to Jennifer.
Thanks, Scott. So just a couple of things to remind people. We're winding down on the CFAS-3, so the current funding cycle ends May 31st. Also, just again, to be a broken record, remember to send information on publications. So as these we have, of course, have the concept proposal and the whole process, but as you're submitting publications and publications are accepted, be sure to fill out those forms online. I know Jeff Wozniak just had a publication accepted. And I think that's it for announcements. Is there anything else, Jill, that I'm forgetting before we go to project updates?
No, I think that's great.
Okay. All right, so just updates from each project. Bill and Helen, do you have anything to... I'm just going down the list, so...
No, we don't have anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go ahead, Bill.
I'm sorry?
Oh, this is Helen. I just wanted to let you know that the CVSB registry is still working. People are signing up to the registry, and we're working on adding some new variables to the brain measurements data set, and a little bit of work on the 3D facial imaging as well, and that's it.
Okay. How many people have registered? Do you know the number?
At this point, we have almost 150 people accessed the registry, and I think 125 people that would love to be contacted, you know, they are ready to volunteer.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Neither Ken or Tina are on, correct? Tatiana?
So I think so Peter's on too. So I think the main thing we're just trying to work through now is the 3D cameras that we currently have. So we're just finishing collection of images, of course, but also just trying to make sure we know what we're going to do with the current cameras that we have, where they need to go, and sort of how they might be used going forward. And so we're just kind of closing up data collection, I think, right now.
Okay.
Peter, I don't know if you want to add anything.
Not to that, but if you remember when we had the reverse site visit meeting, Benedict Halgrimson asked me about automated landmarking, and I said I was aware that he just published something in a couple of months ago about that, and Mike and I decided to download their software, which they've made available, and we've been experimenting with it, and we're not surprised. It kind of works, but it doesn't work as well as maybe the papers would give you the impression. But it's looking promising, and we've been testing it on various data sets. So it may be something that we can piggyback on in the, you know, the first part of CFAS 4. That's it.
That'd be great.
Tatiana, are any of the cameras in South Africa still...
No, not anymore. It got packed up and brought back.
Okay.
Okay, Sarah.
We have been continuing to collect data, and we personally in San Diego have been struggling with some equipment failure, which is a problem, but not something we can replace at this late date. But we're still actively getting data into the database. That's what we're doing, focusing on right now.
Which equipment are you?
CANTAB.
Okay. Elizabeth.
Right. So I guess ditto what Sarah said on all fronts. We've been having the same equipment fail on us, so we're sending it back and forth, right, Sarah, trying to finish up.
Yep.
What
yeah.
We're doing. And we spent some time recently trying to sort of, all the neuroimaging data was in, you know, in the Google Docs. It was always reflecting, you know, chunks of uploads. So when people look at the graphs, it looks like nobody's been doing anything for a year. So anyway, I think Jill might have put the new graph in the Google Docs this time, but we hope it looks like more reflective of the progress and work than the way we had done it before. But anyway, we're just finishing up our last CFAS certified RA is leaving, so we got to finish up by the end. Yeah, for the neurobehavior. Anyway, that's where we are.
Okay. And Scott, did you have any thing beyond what you presented today that you want to update us on?
No, not really. We we're getting ready to publish the BAX data that I showed you guys, and this ethanol cannabinoid data. That,
okay.
That's about it.
Okay. Tom and Kathy.
Yes, hi there. Let's see, just a few notes. We will again, NOFAS will again direct our audiences to the registry. It's good to hear that it sounds like folks are still looking into that, and we'll make another push here. We're also, I don't know if it's anyone who's on the call today, but others had in the past mentioned an interest in sort of the spokesperson training that NOFAS offers, and we're going to be doing another one of those webinars in early June, so we'll share with everyone when that will occur. Certainly be looking at the post-acceptance form from Jeff and be prepared to reach our audiences when that's published. We've also, just in the last 4 or 5 weeks, had about 20 meetings with folks on Capitol Hill. Just really quickly, when we meet with someone and one of the universities or institutions, CFAS, is in their district or state, we share the basic information from the CFAS website in terms of the researchers and then this highlights of what you're all doing and if there have been any recent papers. So we've had a number of those meetings recently, and also those meetings we've been talking about the Congressional Caucus. There had been an FASD caucus. It's been dormant for a couple of years, and just having some discussions about reconstituting that caucus or perhaps folding it into the Maternity Care Caucus or one of the others. So, oh, and also we were just on Monday, Tuesday in Atlanta with the CDC's ASD grantees. And so while we didn't do a presentation, we did just mention some brief updates about CFAS and answered a few questions with those folks.
Great.
And we also had a recent webinar featuring Christina Petrenko's work, and so I think it was very well attended. I wasn't there to participate in it, so Tom can maybe speak more to that. And I've been busy providing other webinars and training workshops and all for various audiences.
Yeah, that's right. Christy's webinar was very well received. I think maybe had 150-plus registrants, and our colleague Andy Ketcher, who's our communications director, moderated that, but there were a lot of questions and been lots of follow-up. And with all of our webinars, they then are posted on our YouTube site, Alcohol Free Pregnancy, and many of you have done those webinars for NOFAS. Some have many thousands of views, and that's something we'll continue.
Good, thank you. Christy, is Christy Donald on?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
So we are, a couple of things on the advocacy front. Been invited to present to and contribute to discussions at a provincial level on early risks to early child development. In our Western Cape province on the basis of the work that this research that CFAS is part funding, and then further on the back of that being involved in a national task team on addressing initiatives to deal with the drinking in pregnancy issue, which remains huge across the country. So that's encouraging, the degree of engagement that seems to be picking up in recently. And then from a data collection point of view, I've got a new PhD student who's fantastic, and we've been scanning very efficiently. And yeah, we've scanned over 80 children now in the 2 to 3 year category, which is this grant, and they are all being followed up with neurocognitive assessments as well. So carrying on.
Good.
And hopefully we'll see you at RSA. So I'm coming over to RSA.
Good. Joanne. Did we lose? Maybe Joanne maybe had left a little early, so we no longer have her. Did I miss anyone? Does anyone have any other updates or business they want to bring up?
It's Johan. Sorry, I came on late.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
So we're just still working on the genetics. We have a lot of CRISPR mutants in the mTOR pathway that are coming up. Should be screened for ethnocentricity here pretty shortly. We have some exciting preliminary results. And we've gotten our forward genetic screen up to just about full gear right now. We're seeing some interesting ethanol-induced phenotypes in that we're looking to follow up. So we'll just be continuing on that.
Good. Anyone else? Pop on late.
Jen, can I interject real quick? This is Jill.
Mm-hmm.
The mention of RSA, if you guys can just let me know if there's any CFAS presentations that are going to be happening there, that would be great. I can put a list together if there are posters or symposia. I know there wasn't a specific CFAS symposia, but if you're presenting CFAS data in a symposium, please let me know.
Okay. Good. Thanks, Jill. And does the science Sarah, Joe, or Dan, do you have any comments for the group?
No.
No.
I'll be beyond what I already did. One question I had is, were we planning to have a group meeting with the CFAS investigators at RSA this year? Has that been discussed?
I think it's been discussed. I think it's still in limbo pending
mm-hmm.
everything. So
mm-hmm.
to be determined.
Everything. Okay.
Yes.
To be determined.
Okay.
It'd be good if things look good, it'd be good to have it.
Yeah. I just want to make sure
yeah.
I didn't miss anything. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I were to guess, I would say maybe keep your Sunday lunch soft.
Soft Sunday lunch. Okay.
Okay.
I just had oral surgery yesterday,
so
they're soft right now.
It does sound a little bit like
idea what's soft.
We'll use a blender soon.
Let me edit
a
myself.
Big straw.
Keep it open would be the better word. Maybe blocked out. I don't know. Sometimes it's... don't match my brain.
Hey, Jill, this is Scott. When you're planning the if there is a CFAS meeting, would you keep in mind the teratology schedule as well? Because some of
sure.
us are going to be attending things at the teratology meeting.
Right. Okay.
And in fact, my postdoc she's up for an award at teratology, and she is speaking at 11:30 at a symposium that goes until 1 o'clock on Sunday.
Okay. Well, maybe if everyone can kind of, I guess in anticipation that we may meet, maybe I'll start a doodle poll just to kind of figure out some times that might work best for people
mm-hmm.
if we're there. Does that seem premature if we're not going to meet, or what do you guys think?
Well, I think once you have a confirmation that it sounds like people would think it's a good idea to meet, so
mm-hmm. okay.
maybe a doodle poll will be best because there's board luncheons and other things.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, yeah.
All right, I'll
yeah.
send out generic chunks, just, you know, what works, breakfast, lunch, dinner. Are those usual times where you guys have the most free time at RSA?
Yeah, well, yeah breakfast and lunch is probably,
yeah.
but it depends on the day. So.
Sure. All right, we'll start.
Maybe Jill, you and I can think about maybe some possible times and talk to Ed, too, and come up with something to put out. All right, anything else? Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Scott, for your presentation. And we will be, I guess we'll have one more call before RSA. So,
yep.
Okay, one more call, and then otherwise we'll see you at RSA, which is coming up fast. All right.
See you all.
Thanks, everyone.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye.